Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll be in Lewisburg this evening. Bob, Sean, and I will be there to pay homage to a certain individual.
Were you calling him Bob while I was on vacation? El Jefe?
El Jefe.
Bueno.
Yes. Si.
Yeah. The guy that sleeps with his award. All right. Some people go to bed at night with a teddy bear. Other people go to sleep at night hugging their award.
Their plaque.
All right.
Plaque is not something you just get on your teeth if you don't brush. It's That's terrible.
We are just ornaments in his world.
Yes, we are. But at the same time, we have to say we love him dearly. He's a wonderful human being 5-6 hours every day. The rest of the time, what do you think, Sean?
Steve, you're looking at me for what reason?
Bob thinks he's speaking for the room.
No.
Here's our play-by-play call of the day.
16 straight games without a home run from July 28th to August 14th. 53 at-bats. Here comes a 2-2. Rizzo swings, launches one to deep right field. Way back there. Looking up is Slater. Gone. Cubs lead 3-2.
See you, Drought.
Yeah, well, just like he did at Williamsport, Anthony Rizzo hit it out.
Yeah.
And look, when the Cubs are home, they're really, really good. When the Cubs are on the road, they struggle. All right, let's keep our attention on Penn State football. Last night, James Franklin, after practice, met with the media. One of those in the group, including one of those that asked questions, Ben Jones, statecollege.com. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, Steve. It's almost finally time for football, so I'm very much ready for that.
I think everyone knows what wasn't talked about last night. It was asked about, but did you glean anything from the 10 to 15 minutes that you had with James Franklin or maybe with others last night?
I mean, I think the biggest thing we saw last night was A.J. Hamler made a spectacular diving catch in the live period that we saw. But I think, you know, the biggest thing really technically is just the news that, you know, Penn State doesn't have a starting quarterback yet. You can argue about whether or not Penn State actually discussed this. James says, you know, honest to God, swear to God, we've never talked about it. That's a little hard to believe. But yeah, I mean, technically, if you're writing down your headlines right now, it's, you know, we're a little over a week away from Penn State's season opener and they don't have a quarterback. I don't think it's necessarily a big concern or there's necessarily something bad to be read into that, but, you know, end of the day, they're still waiting for QB number one to pop up on that depth chart.
I believe you're the one that asked about whether or not two could play. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, you know, we've seen over the years, mostly because Penn State's had Trace the entire time just about under James Franklin, that they've never really used two quarterbacks except for, you know, Tommy Stevens and the Lion or in garbage time, if you will. But, you know, there is, you know, as this competition goes along, the possibility you go, hey, are you going to do this against Idaho? Because, you know, all due respect to Idaho, I don't think anyone's expecting a replay of the Appalachian State game last year in this week one. So you have an opportunity to play both guys. You know, James didn't say that wouldn't happen, but I would say that, you know, he seems be very much against the idea of having to do that. So I would imagine, you know, in the next couple days or going into game week proper next week, they settle all of that. And when they announce it, you know, kind of remains to be seen. But I would be pretty shocked if we're going into Saturday and don't have a definitive answer to who the number one guy is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure with James at Maryland and so forth, what that experience was like in terms of one quarterback or two, but he did coach at Green Bay, and the NFL is a one-quarterback league. Have you ever sensed that that was, you know, that what kind of influence that had on James?
Yeah, I mean, he's said, you know, pretty much the 9 years that he's been a head coach, he's always been a one-quarterback guy. I think you do look, you know, at the NFL, it's a one-quarterback league. I can't think of off the top of my head, or even if I was, we were looking it up, an instance where a team really played, I guess the Ravens kind of did it a little bit last year, but really intentionally played two quarterbacks in the same game. And I think, honestly, you know, if you're looking at this quarterback competition and everything that James has ever said about quarterbacks and picking a new one, you know, you want a guy that's got a little bit more experience, a guy that's been in the program a little bit longer, that knows things. So you even listen to how he talked about the first competition that they had between Trace and Tommy, that, you know, at the end of the day, Tommy was probably better than he got credit for, better than people realized in that competition, but Trace had more experience. He had a little bit more time in the program, and they picked him because of that. So you look at this, you go, well, Sean Clifford's got more experience. He's been around the program a little bit more. He's played more football. So I think right now it's as much about getting both of them comfortable, because, you know, Will's got to be comfortable enough to go in and play if something were to happen, or if he had to be called on to be that guy. So right now, I don't think there's any urgency, because, you know, they're not going to say it, the players aren't going to say it. But, you know, there's a reason why the Big Ten Network ran a feature on, you know, Sean Clifford as a leader, because, you know, I think everybody is pretty much assuming that this is a foregone conclusion.
All right, so now let's get to the other parts, because that, I believe, was Tim Banks one of the guys you talked with last night?
Yes.
Okay, what did you get from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that competition at that second safety spot continues to be a thing. You know, I think this is probably going to be the year that we see a lot more Lamont Wade. You know, we know what Jonathan Sutherland can do, because he's been out there a bunch as well. But, you know, I think you look across, you know, that safety position, and you've got a lot of different options there. You know, Garrett Taylor, obviously. We know what Garrett Taylor can do, and he kind of loads that down, but I do think it'll be interesting to see, and, you know, Tim Banks kind of talked about this a little bit, how that second safety spot kind of shakes out over the first couple weeks, because they really do have a lot of similar options. You kind of get the feeling that this is finally Lamont Wade's time, but you know, you certainly have to back it up on the field as well.
What kind of read have you had in the limited viewings you've had of the running backs, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Penn State is in a position in its running back room where you really want to be as a program across the board. I mean, we've seen a fair amount of Ricky Slade to know what you're going to get out of him. Journey Brown, I think, has looked like a guy that could maybe make a bigger impact than people are anticipated. But, you know, Devin Ford and Noah Cain both come in highly rated prospects. You know, we saw what Noah Cain and Devin Ford can do on, you know, their film that everybody links to all their YouTubes of them jumping over people and spinning around and looking great. Right. I think if you're Penn State, you know, you want a room like that. You want a room where you go, you know, we've got a Miles Sanders behind a Miles Sanders. We've got a Ricky Slade behind a Ricky Slade. And ultimately, you know, we're going to have to redshirt a kid that could have been, you know, a backup or a starter maybe 5 or 6 years ago, because there's just so many options. You know, I think it's sort of the perfect example of what you want in program depth. And it brings up an interesting, you know, I think conversation and debate for that coaching staff to go, you know, if we don't know if we're going to have all four of these guys for all 4 years, do you play everybody have while they're in the program, or do you try and save Noah Cain or Devin Ford for a year down the road? You know, how do you utilize four guys when really, you know, you want to talk about two quarterbacks. You look at the stats over the last couple of years, you know, Penn State has pretty much had their number one running back do the majority of the carries, and it's been Trace technically at number two. And then you look at the third and fourth leading rushers on Penn State's team, and they've only had, you know, 20, 30 carries, which counts for something. But a lot of those come in garbage time. A lot of those come in non-conference games that are not really games sometimes. So, you know, Penn State's going to go from really only using one or two running backs to having really four good options of varying degrees. So I think if you're Penn State, it's a good problem to have, but at the same time, you know, you've got to navigate who you are offensively, and at the same time dealing with the fact that you've got a lot of options.
How do you then view the wide receivers? Because obviously they've got to do a lot of running on every play.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is going to be a bounce-back year for this group. And, I mean, obviously, seeing is believing. I think everyone is sort of waiting to see if they can do that. But you look on paper. We know what KJ can do. I think even though Justin Shorter didn't play a whole lot last year, the fact that he was injured and banged up and adjusting to college, I think you look at what he did in high school, you just meet him and see his body size and everything, you kind of get the feeling that he's going to bounce back and play well. Jahan Dotson, I think, is a nice mold of that kind of Deshaun Hamilton, kind of just like a solid reception guy. Daniel George, Mack Hippenhammer, Cam Sullivan-Brown. There's just a lot of guys in that group that I think can really step up. And I think the biggest thing for them this year is just to be consistent, because we know the talent that they've got. It's just a matter of, can they catch the ball when they have to? I think it'll be interesting to see, and we heard James talk a little bit about this a few weeks ago. The KJ has pretty much been their slot guy, but there's an opportunity for him to move to the outside if the matchups allow for it. When you've got his speed, and if he starts catching it for as fast as he is, he's quite obviously going to be one of the most deadliest weapons, in the nation and definitely the conference. So I think the talent's there, the potential's there, and it's a hard time. You have a hard time imagining that this group is going to struggle 2 years in a row.
All right, so this is going to be week zero. Miami will take on Florida at the Citrus Bowl, and the other game will be in Hawaii where Hawaii will take on Arizona. So you get essentially a week zero, and then they're going to have to play their 12 games over 15 weeks. When you look at games played at this time of the year, played in August, and then next weekend will be, believe it or not, I think there's only one game the entire weekend that's ranked unranked. How do you view the opening weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think, we probably, people that followed Penn State around here probably didn't think a whole lot of it. And then last year happened where you have this game where, everyone goes into week one and says, this is sort of a tune-up, and then you find yourself watching a real game. I think it's good. I think one of the things, to completely change gears, I think one of the detriments to Kentucky is that they start practice and go immediately into games almost a week, 10 days after they start. There's some captive
really
practices
point.
And qualities, but I think, sometimes the quality suffers because you just haven't had the team together for that long. It's a great opportunity for some of these smaller schools. I'm sure Idaho is, going to remember this experience regardless of how the game goes. It's not marquee. It's not always exciting. It's not always the things that we look forward to in the middle or the end of the year. But I think at the end of the day, I do think that'll be one of the interesting things in 2021, and then the year after that when they play Wisconsin in week one. They've got Auburn week two in 2 years. Who knows what Auburn looks like at that time, but it's certainly going to be different than Idaho. So I think there's a purpose for those games, but certainly when you're talking about, firing up the cooler and sitting on the couch, week one, I'm glad college football's back, but I'm sure I won't remember most of those games by the time week three shows up.
Yeah. And again, college football system lends itself to that because the NFL does play four preseason games. Two teams play five. High school football has a scrimmage, right? They used to have two. Now they have just one. College football is nothing. You start. So it's the system sort of dictates. I don't know how you feel, Ben, but to me the system dictates as to how you want to get yourself into a season.
Yeah, and I mean, I've always thought that's the challenge of having one of those really competitive games early on. And, it's the backwards Alabama philosophy where we've seen, Alabama plays a couple, and playing in the SEC is difficult regardless, but then you end up in that week 12, week 11 situation where they're playing, a Naval Academy or something like that to rest themselves for later on. So I do think it has, how do you want to go into the season, get a little bit of a tune-up, because otherwise, you've pretty much been playing against yourself, and nobody knows Penn State's offense better than Penn State's defense. So I do think it's a good opportunity to kind of say, all right, let's get into the year, but, maybe let's not challenge ourselves so much that we end up regretting it.
In the first month of the college football season, not necessarily Penn State, Ben, but in the first month, what are a couple things you're looking for as to whether they come to fruition or not?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it'll be interesting to see how Justin Fields does at Ohio State. I don't think there's any doubt that he's talented and everything. But I do think that when you look at the Big Ten, you know, how does Ryan Day do in that job? I don't think that Ohio State football, who could go pluck anybody out of the sky if they really wanted to, not named Nick Saban or Dabo Sweeney maybe, you know, they've settled on him. How does he look? You know, Michigan. I think Michigan is a story every year in the Big Ten because of Jim Harbaugh. How do they look? Do they live up to their annual preseason ranking inside the top 10? There's a lot of talent there. You know, Illinois starting Brandon Peters. You know, there's a lot of little things like that. I do think Justin Fields is probably the most interesting thing, at least in the conference, that's going on, just to see how they look. Because, you know, if Ohio State doesn't look quite like Ohio State this year, you know, I think if you're a Penn State fan and if you're Penn State, you feel a little different about that trip to Columbus. You feel a little different about the Big Ten East because, you know, every year you kind of have to go in and assume that Ohio State's the favorite, that Michigan's right there. But, you know, if Penn State can catch Ohio State in a down year, and it's never easy to win on the road, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But, you know, at the same time, if Justin Fields looks the part, if he plays the part, if the talent around him looks the part, and Ryan Day is everything they say he is, then it seems unlikely that Ohio State's going to have a down year at all.
Always a pleasure, Ben. Thanks so much for your time.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, statecollege.com. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Coming up tonight, this will be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. Bob will be there, and Sean will be there, and the play-by-play voice of Shikellamy football will be there. The award winner, by the way.
Yes.
Did you go by his office?
Multiple award winner.
Did you go? I walked in his office, and it, like a tape plays. You're now entering the office of the award-winning. I didn't wait for the end. I turned around and left.
Was that his voice?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, it was. Because it starts out with, "Of Shikellamy football." I was like, okay.
Oh, boy. Here we go. And but we'll hear him Friday
hours.
Night Where's at me? Danville Ironman Stadium in the Braves' canoe up the Susquehanna.
50 hours from now, he'll be on Facebook.
One of those.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Facebook, Instagram, InstaKevin, whatever.
Yeah.
He'll be on there doing his social media thing. Then there'll be five people that pick it up 1 week.
Yeah.
Right? Then there'll be seven the next week.
That's called momentum, Steve.
And he's going to sit there and tell us about this 29% increase.
Yes.
Right. It's all about the numbers.
You can make the numbers say anything you want.
Sure you can.
29% increase in viewership. Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
Count me as impressed.
Yes.
Digital media cybermetrics.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
He asked me, he said, what's my war number? Right? I told him Afghanistan.
Yes.
So it's...
Thank goodness we didn't have the draft when Kevin was 18.
We wouldn't have won much.
No. And, but, you know, we've got, a lot of games on Sunbury Broadcasting Friday night.
You got Selins Grove will be on Eagle 107. You have Lewisburg on 100.9 The Valley, and then Shikellamy at Danville here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Actually, got Selins Grove entertaining Lewisburg tomorrow night.
Oh, a double dip
in 2 days.
Yes. So we'll have, of course, Greg and Zach, and either Kevin or the Chief will join us for our first high school football roundtable tomorrow.
We never know about that one, do we?
No. And I have a feeling this season will be a week by week basis.
This season, we'll hear more of the Chief.
Yes, you know, Steve.
I'll ask more football questions.
Yeah, right. yeah, and things that require analytical abilities.
So, how far do you have to drive to get to Danville? Chief comes on. So, tell me a little bit about the Shikellamy defense.
Kevin and the Chief remind me of a Broadway play. Jekyll and Hyde.
I was going to say Thelma and Louise, but yeah. That's all right.
I was thinking like true Broadway play, like Rent or,
Rent?
Or Cats.
Rent? Cats?
Hamilton?
My mother, decades ago, went to see Cats. She hated it. She says, all these cats are running all over the stage. She says, I just really didn't.
That's play, Mom.
Didn't like it. I said, well, Mom, that's the play. That's why it's called Cats. She says, I know that. She says, but everybody made it seem like the greatest thing since sliced bread. I walked out of there and went, this is awful.
God bless your mom.
Oh, my goodness. It's all like the musical, like the movie Chicago, right? I couldn't watch it. I couldn't watch it. It's like they just break out into the song. Yeah.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. So we'll be in Lewisburg tonight as the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation family gets together, and along with a lot of other great, great people that make this place run. We're looking forward to that, and the King of Ward 3 in Danville will be there.
He's today Danville, tomorrow the world.
To him, Danville is the world.
As it should be. Yeah.
And I mean, Sean, I know, Sean, you view it that way, don't you?
Absolutely, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, this annual get-together is so much fun. And, Steve, you have great responsibility tonight.
Yeah, I know. I've got to get up there, and I have to be the I have to be like Tom Dreesen as the lead-in to Sinatra.
Yes.
So I got to warm the crowd up. And then, well, I tell you, every year when the suit makes that emotional speech, I mean, Sean really tears up.
We all do. And,
right?
And
we all do.
The room gets a little dusty.
It really does, because it's like, will you just please stop?
Yes. I'm sorry. And one year people actually passed a hat to buy him off. You know, like,
you can, okay, we're done, right?
Yeah.
Somebody asked me one time, what was the best part of his speech? And I said, I said the end. He said, the end.
Yes. So when he uttered the words, and in conclusion.
And in conclusion. Yes. Yes. All right. Dennis Dodd wrote an interesting article on this year 150 of college football. So everybody's doing a series of articles. And I think this article, I think Dennis does a brilliant job of really capturing what Southern football means. Over the years, as much as the Penn States, Ohio States, Michigans of the world, maybe a Notre Dame, well, obviously Notre Dame, a USC or a Texas may have tried to, you know, and all of them have been really terrific at college football. What is it about the quote-unquote passion of the Southern football fan? Why is Southern football beyond what people believe? Tony Barnhart, and we've had Tony on the show before, who is the legendary writer that's done most of his work with Atlanta. In Atlanta, and he was asked about what the difference is between the Big Ten and the SEC. He said, if the Big Ten Network is not on in your home in the footprint, you are immediately calling your cable provider to get it straightened out. He says, in the South, if you don't have the SEC network, somebody's house is going to get burned down until you do get it. That's the difference. That's what he wrote.
Right. Well, it's all about passion.
Well, it is. And so then Paul Feinbaum, who obviously is down there. Okay, so Paul's there and has lived there, and we know his show is very popular, especially throughout the South, but especially in Birmingham. And I thought Paul gave a really interesting response. He said, I lived in Alabama. It was always put down. Mm-hmm. And you have to live someplace to know, okay? I lived in Alabama. It was always put down. It was forced to defend sometimes the indefensible in terms of history. It was also 49th or 50th in every category imaginable. You know, education, employment.
Income,
you know. But it was first in football. It gave the citizens of the state a sense of pride. It gave them something to fight back with when they were kicked and spat on in their own minds by people up north. I think that's interesting. They were the ones that, you know, Baton Rouge on a Saturday night.
Oh.
Between the hedges in Athens. Obviously, now Alabama played a lot for many years in Birmingham. They didn't really start really playing a lot on campus until recently.
No, they were not in Tuscaloosa. They were Birmingham.
I mean, I remember when Penn State beat them. Penn State went to Tuscaloosa and won in Tuscaloosa in 86 and 90. When they won in 1990, that was only the 18th loss they'd ever had at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Now, they won like 120 games. See, they hadn't played a lot of games.
Right.
But Penn State had two of the 18 wins.
Unprecedented.
Right? Now, in 88, they're like, well, yeah, they lost in 88. No, the game was at Legion Field.
In Birmingham. Yep.
Right? The game in 82 was in Legion Field. Now, 84 was in Tuscaloosa. Penn State lost. Penn State in Tuscaloosa lifetime's 2-2. Right, in Tuscaloosa at Bryant-Denny Stadium. But Alabama, for years, played at Legion Field. And I remember I had to open the game in 1988 at Legion Field. And this is, you know, I was the third announcer on the radio network
sure.
at the time. So I was the one that opened and got things going in the broadcast. And I said, welcome to the Mecca of Southern College football. That's how I
was going to say, and that's all you had to say, and everybody knew what you were talking about.
Right, Legion Field in Birmingham. Now, today, you don't think that way because that's the home of UAB football. That's the home of the Birmingham Bowl. That's what it is. But it used to be Alabama played all of its home games at Legion Field. Maybe they'd play a select game at Bryant-Denny Stadium. The Auburn-Alabama game for decades was always at Legion Field.
Yes.
It wasn't until then they started doing the Auburn-Tuscaloosa thing, which in reality is what they should have been doing the entire time anyway. But that's what it meant. So, I mean, Florida football for a long time was not very good until then Galen Hall.
Penn State quarterback.
Got them, helped resurrect the program.
Yes.
Then that was followed by Steve Spurrier, then Urban Meyer. Well, Florida football before that was not very good. Georgia was always good football. Then they got Herschel Walker. And you see the great highlights of Herschel Walker. How many of those great highlights do you see that are at night? You know, at night, it's warm in the South. You know,
oh, sure.
Well, you've got crowds that are just excited that may have been tailgating during the day.
Yeah, for about 3 days prior.
But obviously, as somebody who's been to Alabama for a football game, those people cannot be nicer. Okay? You go down there and they... Now, maybe it's a Penn State thing. Maybe it's a Joe Paterno thing. And I know Joe does have a lot to do with this. They do...
They revere him down there.
At Alabama... When I was down there doing basketball, right, do you know how many fans came up to me and said, you worked with Joe Paterno, didn't you? I said, yes, I did. And they were, well, It was very interesting, the dynamic down there.
But they, I think it goes back to Joe's relationship with Bear Bryant.
Yes.
And Bear Bryant viewed Joe Paterno as an equal.
When Joe won National Coach of the Year the first time, and I want to say it was 1968, Joe was sitting with Bear Bryant at the dinner. You know, and Joe told me this story, so I was 10 years old, so I obviously wasn't a witness. He said that Bryant took out it. He said, Joe, he says, are they taking care of you at Penn State? You know, now Joe had been an assistant coach for 16 years. So when he became the head coach, he got more money. So Joe felt pretty good about, hey, look at the, you know.
Yeah.
So he told Bear what he was making, and Bear Bryant said, no. Bear took out a napkin. He said, Joe, you need to ask for this, right? Then he started going through some other things that he needed to ask for, right? Joe told me that each one of the items he put down, and there were like four of them.
Right.
Three of the four Joe took back with him to Penn State. He said the only one he didn't do is that Brian told him he needed to control 200 tickets completely on the 50-yard line.
Ooh.
And Joe said, I can't do it. He didn't tell Bryant that.
Yeah.
But he said, I just didn't think I could do that. I didn't think that was right. Okay. So that's why he never brought that back. And Penn State gave him the three things he looked for.
Sure.
Or that Bryant had put down. Penn State did give that to him, which then, of course, then helped. So that's the story he told me. But that's the kind of control that Bryant had at Alabama. Where it was not just financial control, but he also had control about what was going on in the stadium. He had control over the Auburn-Alabama series. I mean, and of course, with him, I'm not going to let Cal College dictate to me. It's like, okay, great, yeah. I love it. But Dennis writes a great article on Southern football. Now, mostly it's the SEC. There are some ACC schools.
Well,
but remember, Florida State, till Bowden got there, was not very good. They had the year with Ron Sellers and those guys. Kim Hammond, I think, was the quarterback.
And Sellers was a wideout.
Yep, and they played to a 17-17 tie with Penn State at the
game. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. That was Jack Curry from Danville played in that game.
Yeah, I think isn't Jack the one on the plane that said to Joe afterward, he said, well, because Joe went for it on fourth down.
Absolutely.
On the 15-yard line. He said, well, the country didn't know who the head coach of Penn State was before. They sure do now.
And he also said, Coach, I'm sitting back in the back of the plane with all the seniors, and we took a vote. You blew it.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
That's right, a 17-17 tie. And that might have been the start of Florida State football.
Yeah. Well, you know, they've also been the SEC has also been willing to be to show some foresight. Okay, let's break into divisions. Roy Kramer, to his credit, you know, we've talked about the foresight of a Dave Gavitt, and I've often talked about the foresight of Joe. But let's give Roy Kramer credit. He said, he looked at the rules of college football deeply. I mean, it was deep in the rule book that if you had 12 schools, you could have a championship game.
You could break into two divisions and have an extra game playoff.
Yep.
Gee whiz.
So, then, because he found it. He was trying to get more revenue. And, of course, they, in 1992, play the doggone thing. Well, when they played the thing, that was the game where, what the heck's his name? Because he played with the Cleveland Browns after this. Picked off a pass late in the game and ran it back for a touchdown. Alabama won. Well, the ratings were through the roof. The ratings were through the roof because the game was so good and you felt like I'm watching a game with stakes.
Exactly. It was a meaningful game. And that had to get noticed in places like the Pac-10 and the Southwest Conference and the Big Ten.
But Joe kept telling – now Delaney, to his credit, did try in the late 90s to get Notre Dame. Okay, he did.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Jim did it the right way. Jim, absolutely, his effort to get Notre Dame was the right way. In other words, look, none of this piecemeal stuff.
Yeah.
All in, all out. And they almost got him. And that would have been the 12th team.
And, boy, that would have been something.
Right. But they then waited 12 years. And in that 12 years, Joe kept saying, look, we need a 12 school. We need a 12 school. We need a championship game. Right? There's too much lag time in between when we play and then we play the bowl games while everybody else is playing.
And you got.
We're out of the picture. And finally, of course, then they got Nebraska. But 1992 is when the SEC started that. That Southern football, to their credit, is something that is so passionate. It doesn't mean Michigan fans, Penn State fans, they're really passionate. But, for example, there's even passion at Vanderbilt. What kind of passion is at Rutgers?
Right? I would say that's of a limited variety.
Okay, Kentucky's a basketball school.
Right.
So is Indiana. But you should have seen the passion of the Kentucky football fan down at the Citrus Bowl.
They were very passionate. They were really into it.
I mean, the Indiana fans that are there are really into it.
Yeah.
Right? And I'll give you one quick note about that. Years ago, I'm going back, this is pre-Brady, they were talking about who are the most passionate fans in Boston.
Okay.
Right? Well, the Red Sox, of course, universally loved. The Bruins, especially when they had Orr, universally loved. The Celtics were at least winning. Right, and the Patriots weren't winning. Yet the writer, and I think it was Ron Borges, said, yet I say that the Patriot fans who are there are the most passionate fans because they'd be given nothing to work with, and they're there every single week. And I thought that was an interesting point. In other words, it's easy to jump on the bandwagon of the, hey, we're all winning here.
Yeah, let's all be Celtic fans this year.
Right, we can do that. We're with the winners. It's to hang in there the entire time. I mean, that tells you something. And we've seen bandwagon jumpers before. I mean, the guy over in digital media, he's constantly limping, jumping on and off bandwagons. It's unbelievable. What are you laughing about? What are you laughing at? Let's take a break. Because, I mean, he's laughing so much he can't even talk.
He can't push the button to get the commercials running.
Did I slip in something you didn't expect? We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. You know, there's another part about the Southern football thing that's very, very important to please consider when you talk about why are the people so passionate about football in the South, college football in the South. They didn't have a pro team until 1966.
Yeah, no pro teams in Alabama, Mississippi.
Yeah, I mean, the Atlanta Falcons did not come into being until 1966. So Southern football ruled the roost because that was their football. That was their... Up here, we've got the Giants, the Eagles, the
Steelers.
Jets, the Redskins, we've got so many pro options. Do the Ravens count?
No.
Long time options. I mean, the Steelers have been in existence since the 30s. The Eagles have been in existence since the 30s. The Giants since the 20s. The Redskins moved to Washington in the mid-1930s. They've been there forever. The NFL did not come to the South until the Falcons were formed in 1966. And, of course, the Falcons were not good. They were an expansion team.
They were playing to a lot of empty seats for a long while.
So you might as well, you might as well have seeded the South. Because then the Saints came into being, and they were terrible forever. So you really seeded you did not have great pro football even when you were in the South.
And the only team in the South that I think that was good back in the day was the Miami Dolphins. But Miami's not really part of the South.
They're too far south.
They're like New York moved to warm weather.
Too far south. I mean, now you've got NFL teams all over the place. Carolina, Tennessee, obviously Atlanta. You've got New Orleans. You've got Jacksonville.
Tampa.
Jacksonville, which is right in the Georgia border. Tampa, of course. I mean, you got pro football teams everywhere. But the Southern football fan is so deeply ingrained that the NFL's an add-on for them.
Sure.
It's an add-on.
Well,
it's not like being the longtime Washington Redskins season ticket holder where that ticket stays in the house for decades.
Steve, there's one reason for that as well. On Sunday, it's NASCAR in the South.
Yeah, it is. It is NASCAR in the South. Now here, look, this is what Penn State's done. What Ohio State's done and what Michigan's done is equivalent to everything in the South because they've not only... This is what makes the Penn State fan base the Michigan fan base and the Ohio State fan base, in my opinion, special. Guess what? They are solidly entrenched while doing it with professional competition. Yeah. Penn State has its entrenchment with the Eagles and Steelers being there forever, and you've got deeply entrenched Penn State fans. You've had the Cleveland Browns going back to the mid-40s in the old AAFC and then the NFL in 1950. Ohio State's entrenched. The Detroit Lions have been there forever.
Ever.
Michigan is deeply entrenched. So what they've done, right, like let's take Rutgers. Rutgers will never be able to overcome the Giants. Never. They'll never be able to overcome the Giants. But see, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, they're so deeply entrenched in their fan bases and done such a great job by winning, but also providing an incredible fan experience, that the passion here is equal to that of any Southern team, and they've had the added competition of long-standing good NFL football surrounding them. In the South, they had the passion because that was the only show in town.
And when you think about where Penn State's located, you've got the Giants and the Jets to the east.
Yeah, and the Eagles.
And the Eagles to the southeast. You've got Pittsburgh to the west, Cleveland to the northwest.
Washington, the Redskins?
Redskins and Ravens to the south.
Okay, I'm not including them.
Oh, I understand. Well, exactly. They're the Pittsburgh Pirates of the NFL.
The Ravens make inroads in York County. All right,
and Lancaster County. They're big with the Amish.
Yeah, but that is... For Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State to carve out the intensity and passion while surrounded by entrenched pro football teams, that's really special. In the South, it was the only show in town, and once the NFL got in there, they got in there with expansion teams that were bad for years,
yep.
And so the college football teams never had to seed their fan bases.
That's exactly right.
Never had to. All right. Looking forward to everything tonight. It'll be great to see most people.
Almost everybody.
Hey, Sean, does he really sleep with the award?
I'm just concerned he may have one like right on the ceiling, so he wakes up in the morning, it's the first thing he sees.
Oh, my goodness. What an awful visual that is. It's awful.
Better than a mirror.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
You can say that a million times. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.